You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we talk to a guest who says Wisconsin's spring election could move the state further to the right.
First, the number of heroin deaths in Wisconsin rose for the ninth straight year. That's according to a report from the USA Today Network Wisconsin. And last week, Governor Scott Walker called for a special legislative session to tackle the problem of heroin and other opioid addiction. He said the issue was a public health crisis and that he's directing agencies to ramp up the state's response to addiction.
Those efforts include ordering the State Department of Health Services to apply for up to $7.6 million a year in federal funding to fight addiction and asking the State Department of Corrections to treat drug abusers for addiction during their prison sentences and after their release.
Well, there's been a lot of applause for Walker and the state legislature and their efforts to fight these addictions. Others say we still have a long way to go. Jessica Geschke joins us now. She's been working with people living with addiction for 13 years. She's also director of alcohol and other drug abuse services at Affiliated Clinical Services, a private treatment center in West Bend. And she's president of the organization Stop Heroin Now. Jessie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, what's your reaction, first of all, Jessie, to what you're hearing from state lawmakers and now from the governor on this issue of opioid addiction?
Well, I'm actually pleasantly surprised, and I'm excited. I heard the news that came out, by Governor Scott Walker. I was very, very happy with the task force and what took place with Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish and Representative John Nygren. I think that the opiate task force and the three of them, they came up with some exciting things for our state. You know, and the way I view things is any movement towards helping individuals with addiction is good movement. We need help. So I'm really, really thrilled.
I want to get into some practical measures and where you see the real needs here, but I want to start with kind of the culture of the way we think of addiction, especially when it comes to heroin and opioid medications. I know you've said elsewhere that we need to get past the stigma that we apply to people suffering from these addictions. Why is that an important step?
I come from, I can give you a little bit about my personal
Sure.
story. My brother is an opiate addict, and he is in recovery currently. And so the stigma, I think, that follows every single individual out there, and it doesn't just have to be heroin addiction. It can be anything, even, you know, those who struggle with alcohol addiction. There's just that stigma of, I'm an addict. I'm a person who has this disease. And it's not like the disease of cancer, you know, and you can even ask a mother who's buried their child from this addiction. If you bury your child from the disease of cancer, people will come and they'll surround you and they'll give you hugs and bring you food and dishes and say, oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. You bury your kid from the disease of addiction and it's a hush-hush, oh, my gosh, your kid must have been such a terrible person kind of thing. And that needs to stop. This is a disease, it's a brain disorder, and it's the same as any other disease that's out there. And I think that stigma of, well, they chose to do it, they put that needle in their arm, they overdosed and died, so it's a good thing and they should just all die. I mean, I've heard statements like that come from so many people's mouths. And I think if you had a brother, a sister, a loved one, a husband, a wife that was addicted, you wouldn't be saying those things. And breaking that stigma down, breaking those barriers for people to understand that this isn't so much a choice when you can't stop.
Now, you work directly, in addition to your personal experience, you work directly with people suffering from addictions. What services do we need for them in this state that we don't have enough of?
I mean, I work in an outpatient facility. We do intensive outpatient treatment there. And I personally feel that we need more inpatient treatment services, and we lack funding for that. We also have insurance barriers for that, which is why I try to bridge that gap with the nonprofit. I think that we have a lot of issues with when it comes to like probation and parole. There's a huge a need for like treatment alternative diversion programming. I mean, there's tons. I mean, really, just want me to list one. There's a lot of different things that we could do, and I think that we're making those strides and steps now, moving in those directions.
Now, this idea of federal funding through the Cures Act that the state is going to be applying for, where would that money go that would make the most difference?
I mean, I think that money is going to go in a bunch of different areas. I mean, I'm not really sure what the plan is. I think that Governor Walker and the task force was allocating some of that money towards, like, school funding for, like, the administration of Narcan. I read something about being able to, you know, help kids, or that, like, so teachers can do Narcan on kids in school. And a lot of backlash came from that. And I heard people saying, well, why would we need Narcan in our high schools? And I can tell you, I've done assessments in my practice on 12-year-olds with track marks. And I know it's easy as an adult to sit back and cast judgment on other adults and suggest that, you know, a heroin addict asked for the disease, and if they're addicted to heroin, they should just stop. But when you look at a 12-year-old kid sitting in my office with track marks, or a 12-year-old who's died in a bathroom of a high school because he didn't have access to Narcan, it's not so easy to judge. And so that would be a great place for that, you know, some of that treatment funding to go to. I'm sure that I can't remember where else there was some more $1 million, you know, grant money going just for the addiction treatment itself. And as a provider, that helps. I mean, that interests me for that money to go to just daily treatment. People can't get into treatment because they don't have it. They don't have insurance. They can't afford insurance. There's a huge gap there. It's a vicious cycle.
Talking to Jessica Geschke. She is with the group Stop Heroin Now, and she's director of alcohol and other drug abuse services at Affiliated Clinical Services in West Bend. Let's talk a little bit about prevention, Jesse. We've heard this again and again from the Attorney General on this show, Brad Schimmel, from Representative Don Nygren. You mentioned people working in this, that the cheapest and most effective way to deal with this is to try to keep people from getting addicted in the first place. What do we need? What do you see us needing to help with that?
I think prevention measures can come in multiple fashions. I'm a big advocate for schools. We go in and we speak at schools. I speak with an organization called Rise Together in schools. Prevention measures is getting to our youth. Our youth are our future. And we need to get into those school districts. We need to get parents educated as to what to look for in your youth that could be using. We need to start, you know, with our youth, and we need to get them educated not to even start or pick up.
And then with someone who's already addicted, as I understand it, you know, even if they do get access to treatment, even if they have some kind of access to treatment, it doesn't always work the first time, but it might work the second or fifth time. How do we make sure that we keep getting access to treatment, even if the first round isn't a success?
That's the million-dollar question. I think, you know, giving individuals access to treatment, that's one of the hardest things that we have. And that's where we have this vicious cycle, because if people say, let's say they have access to treatment because they have great insurance, by the time they get through that, you know, first round of treatment, they get back to their jobs, they end up relapsing, they lose their job, they lose their insurance. Sometimes they might get a legal ramification, they end up in jail, they lose their insurance. So I don't have the answer for that. I don't know how to continue with people and keeping them sober long enough to get them to be productive, other than just keeping the door open. I mean, that's what we do at our treatment agency. They're always welcome back. I've implemented that with my own home life and with my brother's addiction. You know, he has been addicted to opiates for the last 10 years, and we have been in and out of treatment agencies throughout Wisconsin and beyond. I think, like, that family support, I have never once turned my back on my brother, no matter what he's done to me. There have been times, I will not lie, that I have almost, I've been in very dark places where I've almost lost it myself because I did not know what to do to help him. And I think it's just key for family members to not give up on your loved ones and to make sure that you're always accessing as much treatment as you possibly can, accessing funding, reaching out, calling people, and just not stopping that ball from rolling until you can get someone to listen to you. And that's what I had to continuously do for my brother, and had to make him make those calls and hold him accountable every single day to make sure he was doing what he needed to do to maintain his sobriety.
We're talking to Jessie Geschke. She's director of alcohol and other drug abuse services at Affiliated Clinical Services in West Bend.
You can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or by posting on the Central Time Facebook page. Is opioid abuse something that has affected you or people you know, someone in your family? What resources do you think your community needs to tackle that issue? And what do you think the state should do to face the opioid epidemic? If you or someone you know has recovered from addiction, what helped you the most? Call us at 800-642-1234.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Jesse Geschke, Director of Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Services at Affiliated Clinical Services in West Bend, talking about heroin addiction and treatment in Wisconsin.
And we want to hear from you. Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. If you're someone who's been affected by heroin or other opioid addiction, give us a call. Or if you work on the treatment side, we'd love to hear from you. And you can tell us if you're happy with the new efforts that Governor Walker has put forward to fight opioid addiction. Is there something else that you think the legislature should be doing? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Jesse, before we go to our callers, I've been throwing around the word treatment. What does, briefly before we go to the calls, what does treatment look like for someone dealing with opioid addiction?
I think treatment can look like a number of different things. I guess it depends on where they're at and their level of commitment. Our state, in Wisconsin, we offer a variety of different levels of treatment. There's outpatient treatment, there's intensive outpatient treatment, there's residential treatment, inpatient treatment. I mean, we have wonderful treatment agencies on an outpatient level of care, and then also we do have inpatient level of care, like such as the Rogers and the Aurora, the Dewey Centers. Nova is another great inpatient level of care. We do have a couple of those as well in the state. If you're looking for, like, more long-term 90-day, care, we do send people out of state for those. Otherwise, we do have, like, the Beacon House up in Fond du Lac. I mean, it just depends, I guess, what people are looking for. But a lot of, and that's where I'm when I'm speaking about, like, what we could use here in Wisconsin, most of the people in Wisconsin who have, let's say, have done heroin treatment for heroin addiction over and over and over, and it's just not working, not sticking, they go out of state. They go down to the Arizona, California, or Florida area for 6 months to a year treatment.
Let's go to our callers now. Tim is on the line in Marinette. Tim, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if our legislators and police departments and physicians have ever entertained the idea of just legalizing drugs, period. It's more of a health issue than a legal issue. It seems like these people get hooked on something, and then they get reprimanded for it, and then now they have a record.
Tim, thanks for the call. And Jesse, I don't know if legalization is on the table or a solution, but there have been moves to make it less of a legal liability to report heroin overdoses and things like that.
Yes, and that comes with the HOPE agenda through John Nygren. But legalizing drugs, I mean, I have very strong feelings about that. I think if you look at, we do have legal drugs such as alcohol. You can legally drink alcohol, but does it make it any less of an issue in our state? No. We have people dying from drunk driving and alcohol overdose on a daily basis in the state of Wisconsin. So I don't know that legalizing all drugs across the state of Wisconsin is going to solve the heroin epidemic by any means.
Tim, thanks for the call. Go next to Susan in Eagle River. Susan, hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Susan?
I just wanted to say that I'm an addict. I was an active heroin addict for over 40 years. I grew up in Fort Lauderdale where drugs were everywhere, and I thought I was cool and all that nonsense. But as what Jesse was saying, I believe exactly what she said. Education is paramount. These kids have no idea of the life that they're throwing away when they pick up. I know I didn't know.
Susan, and thanks. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to say it's paramount to it's a life and death matter. So it needs to be addressed.
Susan, thank you so much for sharing your experience, and good luck continuing to stay clean. What do you think of Susan's story, Jesse?
I think that's amazing, and congratulations, Susan, on your recovery and your sobriety. That's fantastic. I love hearing about people in recovery. It just brightens my day.
Susan, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Irene in Madison. Irene, hi.
Hi. I would like to differentiate here between responsible use of opioids. There are many people with chronic pain issues who are really getting the pinch and a bad reputation for using fentanyl patches and things like that. And there's a differentiation here between people who are predisposed for addiction and those who responsibly use the medications.
Irene, thanks a lot for the call. And there are legitimate uses for these medications, though, as I understand it, Jesse, the medical profession is moving away from opioids, saying they actually don't necessarily relieve chronic pain. For some people, actually make it worse. Do we need to review how we prescribe to make sure that legitimate uses are still out there, but not prescribe it to people and make them more likely to get addicted?
That is exactly right. There is legitimate uses for pain medications. I don't deny that one bit. But it is true, people with long-term pain who use medications long-term can actually create false pain in your body. I know that John Nygren, and I've had this conversation with him prior, he's taken a lot of slack for that. Lots of people have come and said, John, I don't understand, you're taking away our right to have pain medications. We are not addicts. We do not have problems. I know that they are working on that as far as at the state level, trying to differentiate between people who abuse the medication and people who are being prescribed the medication from physicians. So that is something that we are working on, or he is working on, his task force is working on. Just please be patient. And John, I'm sure, can answer any of those questions, too, that people would have, or, his team. And I don't have the answers to that at this point.
And Jesse, briefly in our last minute, for someone listening who's addicted themselves, who have a friend or family member, briefly, some suggestions for them.
I guess just continuing to, keep the open lines of communication. I know, personally, it's super hard to work and be around and support somebody who is struggling. I've been there, and I understand that it's physically and emotionally and mentally exhausting. But in the state of Wisconsin and nationally, we are burying 4 people every minute from an opiate overdose. And so I'm not okay with that, and something has to change. And so we are making those movements and those strides. We are trying to do things here in Wisconsin. And so I guess for me, I just want people to be supportive of our lawmakers, supportive of those individuals, especially our task force here in Wisconsin. Just be supportive of what we are trying to do, and love your loved one. Love them unconditionally. Try to help them. And if you need support yourself, reach out. That's the best support you can give someone else, is to make sure that you're healthy yourself. We're here, Stop Heroin Now. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on the web. We're here to help. That's what we do. That's where our passion lies.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Jesse Geschke with Affiliated Clinical Services in West Bend. Good luck to her and her brother. We've been talking about efforts to treat heroin addiction here in Wisconsin. Find more information with Stop Heroin Now.